Thank you, Olivia. Well, good evening again. You know, she was singing, "We've come to worship." We were singing, "We've come to worship. We've come to bow down." And I thought, you know, what we're studying right now, as we're going through an overview, and we talked about how it's a broad overview, right? It's a high overview. Not getting into the minutia, which I'd love to do, but that's a 3-year journey. We'll do another time. Forgive me. I have to get some water. Fighting a little bit of a cold tonight. And I was thinking about how, because of the time period that we get to live in, and because God saw fit to have men of God take the Word of God and turn it into the printed Word of God that we have with us today, we actually can know our God. And when we know Him, that causes us to worship Him. And so tonight, we're going to go through another big chunk of text. Hope you brought your pens and your piece of paper and your Bible, because to me, the best way is we're literally just going to go chapter by chapter, make some notes if you need to, highlight some things, or come back and read that. But tonight, we're gonna learn a little bit more about this God of Abraham. You remember we talked last week about how, as Christians, it's important for us to understand the history of our faith, because our faith is built upon something. And we don't have blind faith, right? We have historical faith. And the history that God has laid out so beautifully in His Word for us, it confirms us, right? It informs us, it confirms us, it conforms us into the image of God, in the image of Christ, excuse me. And so it's important that we know these things. So tonight, I hope that when we're done, maybe there's some new things you've discovered to worship about God. I was also thinking about just now when Olivia was singing, I was thinking about, you know, how many names of God are revealed just within Genesis? I don't have the answer for you, but you guarantee I'll have you next week, because I had that thought tonight. And I was like, I want to know how many times, because I know in tonight's text as we go through, there are several times when an altar is built and they name this place, whatever, as a tribute to the Lord or because of what God had done. And so there are several times within the book of Genesis, and I'm going to have that answer for you next week, so come back next week. So we'll see. And what that tells me is that God is revealing Himself to these people, not only for their benefit so that they would know who Yahweh is, but even for us now today, I get to go back and I get to see how Jehovah Jireh was His provider in that situation. And because He's Jehovah Jireh in that situation, the promise is He's the same God for me. So all those names and all those experiences that we're just going to kind of peruse through tonight, I hope you'll find some time to go back. Maybe God will just spark one and go, hey, go read that one. Go read that one later on and see what God wants to say to you directly in your situation where you're at today. Hi, Amy. Good to see you again. And hopefully discover a new thing about God that you can worship or appreciate about Him. So last week, you know, we flew, right, from Genesis 1 all the way through Genesis 20. So we started with creation, we immediately got to the fall, and we talked about Cain and Abel. We talked about Adam, and we did Adam's descendants to Noah. And I just wanted to put up some of this tonight because it's going to get kind of confusing. The earth is starting to get populated. There's all these people to try to keep track of. Have you ever felt confused when you're reading through Genesis or the Old Testament, and you're like, wait, who is this person? Or, oh my gosh, Abimelech is mentioned like 4 different times, just like 4 different Abimelechs. And it's confusing because you think that's that Abimelech. No, that's a different Abimelech. And they're like, can they not give them like different names? So I hope that my amateur drawing will help provide some clarity. So we did Adam. We just jumped onto Noah because God destroyed all the peoples, right, because they got so evil. And Noah and his sons were left. We got Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And Shem, out of Shem came the lineage of Abraham, the father of our faith, the father of Judaism. And yeah, I'll just say that. And then we ended with Abraham and Sarah having this encounter where Abraham lied to Abimelech, you know, and he said, "This is my sister," when she was his wife. And I want to bring that back up because we're going to see tonight that Isaac repeats the same mistake that his father did. Oh, generations, I tell you. It takes us a lot, doesn't it? It takes us a lot to get it together. So tonight we're going to start with Genesis 21. So we understand that Abraham had a wife named Sarah, and he had a maidservant named Hagar. God came and spoke to Abraham and Sarai and said, hey, I'm going to give you a son. And they said, oh, we're way too old for this. Sarah laughs, and we're going to discover, beginning tonight, the birth of Isaac. So it happens. So Sarah did not believe that God was going to be able to do this. So she gives Abraham her maidservant, Hagar, and says, hey, have sex with her, and the child that is born, I'll just raise it as our son. So Hagar and Abraham actually produced Ishmael. And then all of a sudden, Sarah, well, not all of a sudden, but 13 years later, Sarah conceives. And now they've got a problem. So let's start with verse 1 of chapter 21. And we're going to read a big chunk of this because this is an important story in our story of our Christian faith, which is born out of the Jewish faith. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said. Imagine that. And the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. If the Lord has spoken something to you, just remember that little verse right there, if that needs to be underlined in somebody's heart tonight. And the Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. God has spoken things to me in my life that I laughed about too. For Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah had born to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. It's no wonder Sarah had given up hope. And Sarah said, quote, God has made me laugh. Isaac means laughter, by the way. God has made me laugh. That's why she named him Isaac. And all who hear will laugh with me. She also said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? For I have borne him a son in his old age. So the child grew, and he was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the same day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, scoffing. Therefore, she said to Abraham, cast out this bondservant and her son Ishmael, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac. And the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. But God said to Abraham, do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. For in Isaac your seed shall be called. So God identifies that the seed will come through Isaac. Yet, God continues, I will make a nation of the son of the bondwoman. I will make a nation out of Ishmael, because he is your seed. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water, and putting it on her shoulder, on Hagar's shoulder, he gave it to the boy. He gave it and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. Then she departed and wandered into the wilderness of Beersheba, and the water in the skin was used up. And she placed the boy under one of the shrubs. Then she went and sat down across from him at a distance of about a bow shot. So from a bow and arrow, imagine a bow shot from him. For she said to herself, let me not see the death of the boy. So she sat opposite him and lifted up her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad. Then the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad and hold him with your hand, for I will make him a great nation. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. So God was with the lad, and he grew, and he dwelt in the wilderness, and he became an archer, bow and arrow guy. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. Chapter 22. Now, it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, and he said, here am I. Then God tells Abraham, I want you to take your son Isaac, and I want you to take him up on this mountain, and I want you to sacrifice him. So Abraham agrees. He gets his son, he gets his servants, they head up the mountain. Isaac's looking around, and he asks his father, where is the ram? And Abraham says what? The Lord will provide. The Lord will provide. Let's continue on. He said to Abraham, here I am, verse 2. Then he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains, which I shall tell you. So Abraham arose in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering, and he arose, and he went to the place which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey. The lad and I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. That's some beautiful, confident faith, huh? We will come back to you. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. But Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. Then he said, look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering? And Abraham said, my son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering. So the two of them went together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. And Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. So he said, here am I. And he said, do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up for a burnt offering instead of his son. And Abraham called the name of the place, the Lord will provide. As it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. God provided a sacrifice in place of Isaac. But he asked Abraham, are you willing? And he wanted to know to what degree Abraham feared God. To what degree was he willing to obey God. And Abraham displayed this tremendous act of faith and trust in God by going all the way through the process until God said, stop. So I'm learning about this God that I worship. I'm learning that I don't worship a God who asks for human sacrifice. Sometimes people will try to tell you, you serve a God because God allowed Jesus to be sacrificed, that you worship a God who likes or encourages human sacrifice. No. No, right here in this story, I can go back to this story and prove that my God stopped a human sacrifice. My God does not take pleasure in human sacrifice. Jesus' sacrifice was a choice, Jesus was both God and man, right? So don't let anybody try to confuse you on that issue or try to tell you that the God that we serve, the God that we love, the God that we worship encourages or requires human sacrifice. There are gods in the Old Testament that we'll learn about in time that do require human sacrifices. But they're not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that's what we're here to learn about. What differentiates our God from other gods? As a matter of fact, that's a lot of what we're going to see as we study these five books, is God is differentiating himself from the other gods of other nations. He's showing them, I'm different. And because I'm different, I've called you, my chosen people, to be different. And that's why he tells them, please don't intermarry. And that's why he's trying to warn them of false gods and idols. I am the one true living God. Know me, understand who I am, so that you can turn away from false gods, so you aren't deceived by false gods, and so that you can tell others about the true and living God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now from Genesis chapter 22, we move on to 23, and this is going to be really sad because I'm just going to go like this, really short. Sarah died and was buried. Okay, moving on. 24. Does that mean it's insignificant? No. But we have a limited amount of time. And 25 and 26 are rich, rich, rich chapters that are complicated. So I want to focus on those, okay? So we're going to go to 24 real quickly. Okay, Abraham decides it's time to get a wife for his son, Isaac. Now, I think this is kind of sweet. We don't do this anymore. Abraham gets a servant, and he sends a servant to find a suitable wife for Isaac. That just doesn't happen anymore, does it? You know, we don't have fathers who do that. I think we have fathers who would like to do that, but that doesn't work too well. So he sends a servant. He says, here, I want you to go find a wife for Isaac. And the servant brings back this beautiful woman named Rebecca. I'm going to write the names up here. Now, I'm just going to tell you real quickly that the servant has an encounter with this guy named Laban, L-A-B-A-N. You need to know that name because it's going to come up later, okay? But I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that right now. It'll come up. So we have Rebecca. Isaac is going to marry Rebecca because Abraham has had her selected. Now, Abraham wanted to make sure that he followed God's command, so he had the servant go back to a certain people group because that's where his son's bride needed to be found from, okay? Again, preventing intermarrying. So he was very specific about the type of woman that Isaac was to marry. Now we get into Genesis 25. All right. Now, I told you that Sarah died, right? It was really short. We just kind of moved on quickly. Well, what's going to happen after Sarah died was Abraham married some concubines, and they bore him more children. Now, Abraham dies, but his sons bury him, which is kind of interesting because Hagar was sent out to the wilderness, right, with Ishmael. And they prayed, and God said, it's okay. He showed him the water, the well. He's going to be okay. So there's just like this split right here. But yet we read in the text, and we're going to take a minute right now and read this, Genesis 25, verses 8 through 10. Well, you know, we'll just stop. We'll start with 7 because it's the start of the story there about Abraham dying. So this is the sum of the years of Abraham's life in which he lived, 175 years. Then Abraham breathed his last breath, and he died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahai-Roi. I just want to point it out because I find it very interesting that there was disunity between Sarah and Hagar, Isaac and Ishmael. And yet, at the end of Abraham's life, we see Isaac and Ishmael coming together to bury their son, their father. So there was this sort of respect. There was this sort of understanding that they were somehow, not somehow, that they were family, that they were descendants of the same father. And so I just point that out because it's one of those little things you can read over, or if you've never read this story, you might have missed out on. So I just thought that was very interesting. We're going to continue on. Isaac has now married Rebekah, and he pleads with God because Rebekah is barren. She's not having children. And so Isaac pleads with God, and she becomes pregnant with twins. Let's scroll down to 21, verse 21. And we're going to read the next four verses. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea. And Rebekah, his wife, conceived. But the children struggled together within her. And she said, if all is well, why am I like this? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. I'm sorry my writing is so small. I hope y'all can still see it anyway. At least get the idea here that we're going along with. So the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field. But Jacob was a mild man. He was dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. He was a hunter, man's man. But Rebekah loved Jacob. Now Jacob cooked a stew. And Esau came in from the field, and he was very weary. And Esau said to Jacob, please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary. Therefore, his name was called Edom, which means red. Just a little side note there if you're curious. He was born red, he was hairy, then he wanted the red stew. So that's important that he's called Edom, I'll tell you in a minute. But Jacob said, sell me your birthright as of this day. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die, so what is this birthright to me? Then Jacob said, swear to me as this day. So he swore to him, and he sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and stew of lentils. Then he ate and drank, arose, and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. Technically, Esau was born first. But the Lord said to Rebekah a little bit earlier, the older shall serve the younger, which goes against historically what would happen, right? The oldest son would get the birthright. He would get the prestige. He would get the double portion. He would get the responsibility of the family. But Esau, for a morsel of food, decides to sell those privileges, that right, to Jacob. So I'm going to put a star right here because this is a major change in the story. Again, you heard me say, we serve the God of Abraham, Isaac, and not Esau. That's right. And it happens, the change happens right there when when Esau sells his birthright to his brother. The reason I wanted to point out that this is where Esau receives the name or becomes known as Edom is because we're going to start learning about and hearing about this people group called the Edomites. Okay? Edomites are descendants of Esau. So Edom, Esau, they're interchangeable. So if we're reading along the text in the near future and I read something about Edom, oh, that's Esau. Okay, it's the same person. This is where I said it gets confusing. They get those names and everything. I hope this helps you guys. This really helps me. Okay, we're going to move on now to Genesis 26. So we did the birthright. Verses 1 through 5, God's promise to Isaac. Then there was a famine in the land, besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham, and Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Then the Lord appeared to him, to Isaac, and he said, hey, don't go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. For to you and to your descendants I give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. So God had a covenant with Abraham. And right here in Genesis chapter 26, he confirms that covenant with Isaac. I want to note the last two verses of this chapter. Let's flip over. The last two verses are going to be for 34 and 35. Thank you very much. When Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they were a great, they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. That doesn't sound like it was a good wedding, huh? Sounds like they didn't have a nice wedding party there. They were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. Now, the Hittites were descendants of Canaan. Canaan was out of Ham. Okay? So, these are the Hittites came out of this part of the lineage. Abraham had taken much care, if you remember when we talked about Abraham sending his servants to go get a wife for Isaac, right? Abraham had been very involved in selecting a wife for Isaac. Apparently, Isaac had not followed in his father's footsteps to find a suitable wife for Esau. How old did the scripture just say Esau was? He was 40. I mean, come on, right? He's had plenty of time for Isaac to seek out a suitable wife. But for some reason, Isaac did not take that initiative for Esau. So Esau took matters into his own hands. And what kind of wives did he choose? Descendants of Canaan, Canaanite women, which God had commanded not to intermarry with. So we see this problem beginning to start with Esau. Now, it started when he sold his birthright, right? We've kind of got a good idea of his character there. And now we see kind of another step of compromise, if you will, of not appreciating the birthright that had been given to him, of not wanting the birthright, the heritage, the lineage, the promise. And so now he takes another step away from who he was born to be and marries the Canaanite women. Isaac and Rebekah were deeply distressed by his choice. So, moving on to Genesis 27, we're going to see that Isaac blesses Jacob. Isaac is now going to bless his sons. Now, originally, Isaac says he wants to bless Esau, right? And he does that because why? Esau was the firstborn. That's what he was supposed to do. But when you read this story, and I wish we had time, you just can't believe all that Rebekah and Jacob go through to manipulate Isaac from not blessing Esau, but instead blessing Jacob. They manipulate the whole situation. Rebecca overhears Isaac say, "Hey, I'm ready to bless you, Esau. My eyes are dim. He can't see very well. It's kind of like me, I guess, with the glasses. I can't see very well." And so Esau, I want you to make me a meal, and I want you to come, and I want to bless you. Well, Rebecca overhears this. Now, what did we know? Think about Isaac loved Esau, but Rebecca loved. We see this whole family dynamic, which is just, it gets messy. It's like Thanksgiving for some of us. I don't know about y'all, but you know. And so Rebecca overhears this, and Esau leaves to go kill something to make the stew for his dad. So Rebecca calls in Jacob and goes, "Hey, I got something right here. Let's make a quick stew. You get in there." And he says, "Hey, Dad will know it's not me. Esau's hairy." She's like, "It's okay." So she goes and gets a hairy clothing. She puts it on. She makes Jacob to kind of smell like Esau by giving him some clothes that Esau was wearing. They have this whole, it's a sham. But it works, and Isaac blesses Jacob. Then Esau shows back up, and he's like, "Hey, I'm here to be blessed." And Jacob's like, "Oh, what? I thought I just blessed you." "No, I was out hunting. I just got back. What's happened?" And we see this debacle, if you will, and men interfering, trying to get their ways, and yet in the sovereignty of God, God predicted that the elder would serve the younger, didn't he? Didn't he tell Rebecca that? I think he did. Right over there in 25, the older shall serve the younger. Yes. I don't know. I don't see that tells me in the text. That's a great question. It doesn't tell me that they did or did not know. But what I want to point out is that even in the midst of this sham, of this man and woman interfering, God's purpose remained the same, and God, in his sovereignty, accomplished what he wanted to. It's a profound factor we must not overlook in this pathetic story. Behind the scheming and convening of man, the sovereign Lord was still at work. Despite all the efforts of man to thwart the purposes of God through all manner of mistakes and misdemeanors, Jacob, whom God had said would be the next link of the chain of divine purpose, had arrived in that exact position. I found that very interesting. We serve a sovereign God. We can try to mess things up. Oh, we do. Frequently taking things into our own hands, like Sarah, right? "Oh, I'm too old to get pregnant, so here, just let me help God out." And yet, in the midst of all of this, God's purposes are still happening. I love this story. It doesn't discourage me, it encourages me. Genesis 28. Isaac sends Jacob sent to Laban to get a wife and instructs him not to marry a Canaanite woman. Canaanites were the descendants of Ham. We just talked about that. So, Isaac, now that Jacob has been blessed and he's the chosen child, now Isaac sends Jacob back to Laban. It's not a lineage thing, so, but this is... a brother of Laban was was the brother of Rebekah. Yes. And so Isaac says, "Hey, Jacob, it's time for you to get a wife. I'm going to send you to your uncle." Right? Yeah. To your uncle, and you can choose a wife out of that group of people. So your distant relatives, your uncle's family. Again, not doing anything for Esau. Not doing anything to help Esau find a bride. So Esau sees this. So he decides to seek a wife for himself. And he ends up marrying Ishmael's daughter. Oops. Oh! Hold on. Jacob is sent to Laban to find a wife. Esau marries Ishmael's daughter. And while Jacob is en route, he has a dream. Jacob's ladder, right? We've all heard about this one. Let's read about it real quickly. Verse 10. We're in 28. This is verse 10. Now Jacob went out from Beersheba, and he went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night because the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place, and he put it on his head, and he laid down in that place to sleep. Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven, and there were angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. These instances, ladies, are God explaining, revealing, informing his people who he is, okay? So when he makes these statements, when he makes these appearances, it's for their benefit, because you have to remember, they don't have the word like we do. They haven't been able to study who God is. This is all, it's all brand new. So God identifies himself right there. I am the Lord God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and your descendants. Also, your descendants shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and the east, to the north and the south, and in you and in your seed, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Does this sound familiar? So now God has now identified Abraham, Isaac, and now he's saying, Jacob, I'm making the covenant. The covenant is continuing with you. Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. Then Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid, and he said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. And this is the gate of heaven. Then Jacob rose early in the morning and took that stone that he had put at his head, set it up as a pillar, and poured oil on top of it. He anointed it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. Bethel. What does Bethel mean? House of God. Very good. But the name of that city had been Luz previously. Okay, that's so you can identify where it is. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going, and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on, so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. And this stone, which I have set as a pillar, shall be God's house. And all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. Moving on to Genesis 29 and 30. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Jacob remains a deceptive man. Yep. Because the reason it should bother us, it bothers us because it feels wrong, doesn't it, that God would do that? And yet, when you think about the people he has to choose from, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. I know. Concubines and women and... Well, that was a cultural thing. You have to remember, that was a cultural thing. No. That's right. That's right. They were populating the earth. Yeah. Yeah. There are things that don't make sense. There are things we can't wrap our brain around. And you're exactly right about where I'm going to end up tonight, is exactly that point. Is that God, I mean, his name means supplanter, heel snatcher, he's deceptive. And yet God chose him to continue the lineage. And then you think, well, why would God do that? Why wouldn't God choose good people? I don't know that there were any. You know? I mean, Abraham believed God and it was counted him as righteous, right? Abraham was righteous because of his faith. Well, he wasn't righteous in his actions. We ended up by talking about how he lied about Sarah being his wife. There is no one righteous, no, not one. God only has imperfect people to work through. And yet God told Rebekah before he was even born, this is what's going to happen. And it did. Yes. No, that's all right. Okay, make it up. That's all right. Uh-oh. Yes. I have read that.
Okay. Which I think is because he provides
him. Yeah. So. Yeah. I have read that. I would not proclaim it as fact personally because I'm not a anthropologist? No. Archaeologist, thank you. I'm not an archaeologist. I'm not an expert in that field, but I have read that. Same thing, yes.
And it was a picture.
Mm-hmm.
It was a picture.
That's right. Of what would happen. Absolutely. You guys are so smart. Y'all are into this. Yes.
Ishmael's
daughter. Yes. 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 Multiple wives again. All right. So next week we're gonna have the Genesis, all the names of God in Genesis, and I'm gonna give you a little more information about the concubines and all the multiple wives. It probably won't give you any peace, but I'll try to provide something, you know.
Mm-hmm. And the intent of a man's heart, we can't go with our heart
off. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's easy for us to look at people. It's so easy for us to look at other people or other people's actions or the choices he made. Go, well, why would God use him?
And it would be harder to accept Jesus if everybody was perfect.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Yes, ma'am, Miss Amy.
One thing I wanted to say.
Sure. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
It's just the pattern.
Isn't it awesome? And it builds our faith. Mm-hmm. When we understand our history, when we go back and find out these little things or learn something new maybe tonight, it does build our faith. And that's exactly where we're going to get to. Because it's important to know, well, you know, where did the Israelites come from? I don't see that name. Where did that Israel guy? When was he born? Oh, he was already born. But it gets confusing if we don't go through the lineage. So, moving on. So here's where it gets really fun. So we're down here to the Jacob's ladder. Okay, now Genesis 29 and 30. Oh my gosh, you want to talk about making babies. Okay, have y'all read this part, 29 and 30? I'm going to let you go read it, and I'm just going to get right to the answers because it's so confusing. They basically have a birthing contest. It's just amazing what women will do, you know? outperform the other girl, or it's kind of just, talk about disturbing, Amy, you know? It's like, oh my gosh, these women, really? So you go read it, and I'm not going to go there, but I do want to give you, I'm just going to go down, and I'm just going to do for each one kind of like this, okay? So Leah gives birth to Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, there's Judah, Issachar, I like that one. Nobody names their sons Issachar. You know, people get these biblical names, if y'all notice, like that's kind of taking a resurgence. I have yet to meet an Issachar. So if somebody's pregnant and you're thinking of, this is another one you don't really see much of, Zebulun. Nobody chooses that one. And important, she has a daughter, finally, named Dinah. Not Dinah Shore. Okay, now Rachel, poor Rachel. She gives birth to Joseph, and then she just has all kinds of trouble. So she gives her maiden, the concubine, Amy, we're back to that. She gives her maiden, her concubine, to Jacob, and she says, here, have children through him, through my concubine. And so out of that, we credit, because it comes from Jacob, and Rachel raises him, if you will, births Dan. Did that make sense what I was saying? Okay. And here's another one. Nobody calls their kid Naphtali. Naphtali. Okay, so then, so then Leah says, I didn't know we could get handmaidens involved in this. So then Leah gets her handmaiden into Jacob. Jacob, I don't want to go there. And that handmaiden gives birth to Gad and Asher. Okay, I've actually heard Asher. Y'all ever met any Ashers? I've met some Ashers, okay. So, they're doing this whole birthing thing. So then, okay. And then finally, Rachel has another son, but it costs her life. It's very sad. And he is born during his birth, she dies. So during childbirth, she passes away, but she is able to give birth to Benjamin. Okay, and that's all in Genesis 29 through 30. Whew. How many did we get?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11,
12. 12 boys, because they're not going to count the girls. Again, yeah. And yes, somebody figured it out. Jacob is going to be renamed Israel. I'll get there in a second, but I'm just going to go ahead and get to the punchline. And this is where we get the 12 tribes of Israel, okay? So they're the 12 tribes of Jacob, 12 tribes of Israel. Genesis 31, moving on. Jacob, okay, so that you can read that whole story about Jacob and Leah. By the way, Jacob is having to work for, right, Laban to make all these babies happen. Back here, Uncle Laban. Yeah, he's a character in himself. So Jacob is spending all of this time with Laban, and all the time that he's serving to get Rachel as a bride, because Laban, again, misled him, right, and gave him Leah, deceived the deceiver, and then, so he has to work 14 years, he's there forever, having all these babies, and finally Laban's like, oh my gosh, you're like overpopulating me, you're taking over. It's like you have more kids and more wives and more livestock, and so we got to go. So Jacob flees because he could see that Laban's countenance towards him was displeasing. Yeah, Laban didn't like him anymore. He's like, get out of here. So Genesis 32, Jacob sends a message to Esau. So Jacob has been in the land near Laban this whole time, having all these babies. And he sends a message to Esau, and he gets back some kind of scary news. Let's flip over to 32. And we're going to start in verse 6. Well, actually, we'll start verse 3, I'm sorry. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Edom, Esau. Then he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau. Thus your servant Jacob, Jacob calls himself the servant of Esau. I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks, male and female servants, a whole running slew of kids, and I have sent to tell my lord that I may find favor in your sight. Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you. Isn't that great news? And he's bringing with him 400 men are with him. Yeah, that wasn't quite this brotherly reunion that I think Esau and or that Jacob was wanting to have. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two companies. And he said, if Esau comes to one company and attacks it, because he totally believes that Esau's coming to kill him, right? Because stole his birthright. He's been favored by Isaac. Isaac found him a wife. Esau's getting the raw end of the deal. So surely Esau wants to kill Jacob. So he says, here's the deal. We're going to split into two companies. And if Esau comes to one company and attacks it, then the other company, which is left, can escape. And then Jacob said, oh, God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family, and I will deal well with you. He's quoting back to God what God had said to him. Jacob says to God, I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant. For I crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I have become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother with the children. For you said, here he goes back to God, this is what you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. Skip down to 22. So he's made this request to God, and he's going to lodge there that same night. In verse 22, Jacob arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons, and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. And he took them, sent them over the brook, and sent them over what he had. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw, capital H, he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, the man he'd been wrestling with all night said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel. For you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. Then Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over, Peniel the son rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat the muscle, that shank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip in the muscle in that shank. Genesis 33 continues. Now Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and there Esau was coming, and with him were 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the manservants, and he put the maidservants and the children in front and Leah and their children behind and Rachel and Joseph last, and he crossed over before them and he bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and he embraced him and he fell on his neck and he kissed him and they wept. And he lifted his eyes and saw the women and children and said, "Who are these with you?" So they have this little reunion, Jacob and Esau. And Jacob discovers that he doesn't have anything to fear from Esau at this time. Now we get to chapter 34. We've just got a few more minutes. I want to share with you real quickly, how many of you have read about the Dinah incident or know about what happens here in chapter 34? So Dinah is the daughter, the one daughter that was born from Leah and Jacob. And I want to read this to you because it kind of falls into the theme that we were talking about people God uses. Now Dinah, verse 1, Dinah the daughter of Leah and whom she had born to Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land, and when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hittite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her, and he lay with her, and he violated her. His soul was strongly attracted to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he loved the young woman and spoke kindly to the young woman. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this young woman as a wife." Not romantic. Get me this young woman. He defiled her. He raped her. He loved her. So he goes to his dad and he goes, "Hey, get this woman. I want this woman to be my life, my wife." So Hamor and Shechem go out to meet Dinah's dad, Jacob, to make arrangements, because there has to be a dowry, right? But Shechem had told Hamor what he had done. And when they get to talking to Jacob, it gets back to Dinah's brothers what had happened. And so Jacob and the sons make this arrangement, which is quite disturbing. We're going to read about it. They actually kind of pretend to make an arrangement. Let's go into verse 14. We'll start with 13. Let's see. But the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father, and spoke deceitfully, because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said to him, "We cannot do this thing, to give you our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a reproach to us. But on this condition, we will consent to you. If you will become as we are, if every male of you is circumcised, then we will give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people." That doesn't sound like what God instructed them to do at all. That sounds like a big old soup of compromise. "But if you will not heed us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and be gone." So they thought about it and they decided, yeah, let's take this deal. Sounds like a good deal. Hamor and Shechem said, "We're going to take this deal," which is amazing. Somehow they were able to go back and convince every male in their community to get circumcised. Now, these guys were some fast talkers. Not only did they themselves agree to be circumcised, they agreed that every male in their tribe was going to get circumcised, and the men did it. But, you know, when you get, well, you don't know because you're all women, but when you get circumcised, there's a little recovery that needs to happen. And so in the midst of them laying around recovering from the circumcision, two of the brothers, Simeon and Levi, decide to take matters in their own hand, sneak in while the men are convalescing, slaughter all the men, take the women, the livestock, and bring it back into their fold. Yes? Yes. Oh, well, we know that. It just said that. They deceitfully. Yeah, the text tells us there. Verse 13. I think they felt it was like an act of war. The sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor's fathers and spoke deceitfully. So they said, "We're going to make this deal." But they totally knew what they were going to do. They totally knew that they were going to go in and slaughter them while they were convalescing. But what they did beyond that, first of all, God didn't command them to do that. They took matters, they took vengeance into their own hands. And then they took all these foreign women and brought them in and made them their wives. And so we see that even in the midst, to your point, even in the midst of men acting in sinful ways, being sinful in their actions and in their speech, that God is still doing a miraculous story of redemption that we're able to look back on and think, how could he do that? And how could he choose these type of people? But like we said, what other people does he have? And you know, when I read this story about the defilement of Dinah, I think, you know, why would this be in a holy book, right? Why would this story of defilement, of complete sinfulness, brokenness, just a terrible situation, would be recorded for generations? And it tells me something about God. It tells me that God's not afraid of that. It tells me that God is bigger than that. It tells me that God knows that happens. He's not ignorant. He's not glossing over. Oh, we're not going to tell the bad things about humanity. We're not going to tell the bad things about my chosen people. We're not going to tell the bad things about the fathers of the faith. Why? Because he wants us to know that they were regular people. And that just like he used them in mighty, significant ways, he is using and wants to use us in mighty and significant ways. We don't understand or know the decisions we make today, the life we're living today, the generations beyond us that are going to have a story to look back on and be able to point to and say, Jehovah Jireh, the God who provides, right? So this text gives me hope. It encourages me that God uses real, everyday people. It encourages me that even the most sick and deprived events that happen, that happened back then, that happened today, God is not ignorant of. He's aware and he cares about it. So it encourages me. I hope it encourages you. I hope that tonight you have learned something, one thing, about this God that we worship, that causes you to worship him more, or maybe in a different way, or say, I didn't know I could worship him about that one thing, but I'm going to worship him because of that one thing. We're going to continue into Genesis next week. We're going to finish Genesis. Yes! And what we're going to do, the Lord hopefully will enable us to do this. When we are done next Wednesday, I'll have a document that will tell you the story of Genesis. Literally, it'll probably be maybe 30 or 40 sentences, the entire story. And then we're gonna read that aloud, and we're gonna be able to tell the story of Genesis, okay? We're gonna recognize these names, we're gonna remember certain things, and we're gonna be able to tell the story of Genesis in just a few minutes. And you're gonna leave with having an overview of Genesis, be like, okay, and I can read this four or five times, and I will know Genesis. Here's kind of what the big picture is. Here's the main events that we need to know that are happening in the story of Genesis. And then we'll start into the other books, okay? We'll do the other books a little bit differently because they're not as long, and also because we're not going to break them up. So the other books will be literally one night. We're going to do Exodus. One night, we're going to do Numbers. And again, you'll have a handout. Okay, and you're going to learn the overview of what's happening in that entire book, what are the high points, and then how can I share that with somebody else, or what's a concise way for me to say that. Y'all on board with that? Everybody all good? Everybody good? All right, thank you for your questions tonight. Thank y'all for the feedback. I love that we can dialogue. It doesn't need to be one-way interaction. Don't be shy. If you're not registered for the class via the registration, please do that, because we communicate with you via email. And so I haven't sent out an email, but I will send out an email about next week's class. And that way, if there's a change, like weather happens or something, you'll be notified. So make sure you're signed up on the registration page, gracechapel.net, the women's ministry, if you're not already signed up, so that you can get the emails in case something happens. Because, you know, February can be a crazy month with weather, and we might get some this weekend too, right? All right, let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. Thank you for the history that you have given us, Lord, that we can look back and know that you are faithful, that you are our provider, that you are a God who uses ordinary people even when we're not deserving to be used in mighty ways. We thank you for the faith of our forefathers. We thank you for their imperfections, because it encourages us, Lord, that you love us, you use us, and you want to appear to us just like you did to them, that you want to speak to us just like you did to them, Lord. May we be encouraged in that tonight. May we open your word with expectation that you want to speak directly to us. Help us to understand and retain the information and the inspiration, Lord, that you've given us here tonight. Help us to worship you in new ways, understanding new things about you, that you're constantly revealing yourself to us. So help us to receive that, to plant it deep into our heart, and to let it overflow in worship to you as we live lives of worship and as we tell others about the great I am. We love you, Jesus. We thank you for making it possible for us to live and reign forever with you in heaven. Amen.